This is KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM. KMXT is also in HD, and we have HD2 and HD3, and we're streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. It's currently 30 degrees out at the airport, and it is breezy. West winds of 29 miles per hour, gusting to 37 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 28 degrees. We'll see winds out of the west at 10 miles per hour. And tomorrow, partly sunny with a high near 41, west winds of 5 to 10 miles per hour, gusting as high as 20 miles per hour. Looks like sun will stick around for the weekend with temperatures around low 40s, high 30s. Coming up, the Alaska Marine Highway System has a new director. And Kodiak kids dissect a squid. At Comfish. That's just after NPR headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. The CEO of video sharing app TikTok faced a fierce grilling in Congress as lawmakers from both parties on the House Energy and Commerce Committee questioned the company's ties to China and claimed the app has a harmful effect on children. As NPR's Bobby Allen reports, Shou Chen claims there's a buffer in place to protect Americans' data.
Shou Chu said that there is a firewall in place, a firewall that is getting stronger under a plan that they are now unfolding that would prevent their employees in Beijing from having any access to user data or influencing what Americans see. And it would prevent the Chinese Communist Party from ever accessing U.S. user data.
NPR's Bobby Allen. The federal government and several states have banned the use of TikTok on government devices. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg is publicly defending his grand jury inquiry into former President Donald Trump's against suggestions by Republicans in Congress that is politically motivated. NPR's Ilya Meritz has more.
In a letter to District Attorney Bragg, House Judiciary Chairman Representative Jim Jordan accused the DA of an unprecedented abuse of prosecutorial authority. He demanded documents relating to the investigation of Trump, which may result in the former president being indicted. In his response letter, Bragg says complying with Jordan's document request could harm an active investigation and would infringe on New York's sovereignty as a state. Instead, Bragg suggests a meeting with the House Judiciary Committee to help him determine whether Congress has any legitimate legislative purpose in probing his investigation of Trump. Ilya Meritz, NPR News, New York.
The House Foreign Affairs Committee chairman is threatening to issue a subpoena for a State Department document about the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports Secretary of State Antony Blinken is facing some tough questions about that.
Republican Michael McCaul says Americans should be able to see some of the concerns embassy officials were raising as the U.S. withdrew from Afghanistan. And he's telling Secretary Blinken that he will subpoena for that so-called dissent cable if necessary. Blinken says this is supposed to be a confidential channel for State Department employees to express dissent.
It is vital to me that we preserve the integrity of that process and of that channel, that we not take any steps that could have a chilling effect on the willingness of others to come forward in the future.
He says he's considering ways to share the substance of the cable to the committee. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
On Wall Street, a volatile trading session today as stocks moved from positive to negative territory, ending in the positive. Dow up 73 points, the Nasdaq up 117, the S&P 500 up 11. This is NPR News. The Michigan Court of Appeals says the parents of the teen who killed classmates at Oxford High School in 2021 has to stand trial for involuntary manslaughter. As Quinn Kleinfelter from member station WDET reports, prosecutors allege the parents ignored numerous warning signs that their son could become violent.
Prosecutors say James and Jennifer Crumbly were criminally negligent because they refused to seek mental health counseling for their son even after he requested it. Instead, prosecutors allege the parents told their son to suck it up and bought him a handgun as a Christmas present, the same gun he used to kill 4 students and wound 7 other people. Attorneys for the Crumbleys counter, they may have made bad parenting decisions, but had no idea their son would commit a mass shooting. Now a judge says a trial on the rare involuntary manslaughter charge against parents in connection with their children's crimes should go forward, writing that a reasonable person would have restricted a child from having access to a gun when they were in such a, quote, mentally deteriorated condition. For NPR News, I'm Quinn Kleinfelter in Detroit.
The number of people applying for first-time unemployment benefits fell again this week. The Labor Department says initial jobless claims were down 1,000 to a seasonally adjusted level of 191,000, remaining at historically low levels. The less volatile 4-week moving average was down 250 to just over 196,000. The labor market continues to defy the Federal Reserve's attempts to cool hiring and fight inflation. Yesterday, the Fed raised the key interest rate again by a quarter of a percentage point. I'm Janine Herbst, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include CFP, Certified Financial Planner Professionals, committed to acting in their clients' best interests. Learn more at letsmakeaplan.org. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Kirsten Dobrath. The state of Alaska has hired a new leader for the Alaska Marine Highway System. Craig Tornga has been hired as the ferry system's new marine director. In that role, he'll oversee hundreds of ferry workers and a fleet of 9 ships. The marine director position, formerly known as the AMHS General Manager, has been vacant since the retirement of Captain John Falvey in January. According to the State Department of Transportation, Tornga has extensive experience in the marine industry and management. He started his maritime career sailing aboard ocean-going vessels with Crowley Marine Services, which transports fuel and supplies in Alaska. He spent over 20 years working his way up through that company. Since 2017, Tornga has served as a senior vice president with Kirby Offshore Marine in Houston, Texas. The company distributes petroleum products with a fleet of offshore tugs and barges. The state worked with the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board on the hire, which unanimously supported Tornga. Board Chair Shirley Marquardt said the board is confident that Tornga's, quote, decades of experience and knowledge in the unique marine industry here in Alaska and Houston span every element needed, end quote, to manage the ferry system. Tornga will take over a ferry system facing numerous challenges, from short staffing to an aging fleet. His first day on the job will be Monday, April 3rd. And yearly homicides more than doubled from 2011 to 2019 in Alaska. That's according to the state's report on the most recent homicide data, which shows the annual homicide rate increased steadily and significantly over the last decade. Alaska's homicide rate is higher than the national average, according to the report, and the national rate is high already, more than 7 times higher than other high-income countries combined in 2015. State epidemiologist Deborah Hull-Gilley says the state makes these reports so epidemiologists and other state agencies can see how Alaska's homicide rate is changing over time.
What we saw when we looked at the timeline is that we see about midpoint this increase. So what's the difference? What's happening there that is impacting homicides and having more homicide victims over the last 5 years?
Here's what's new. 532 Alaskans were killed from 2011 to 2020, most with guns and most in the last 5 years of the study. Homicides by firearm increased substantially in most regions in Alaska. Men were most frequent victims, accounting for 2/3 of the homicides in the state. Of female victims, nearly 40% were killed by intimate partners, like current or former spouses. Alaska Native people were killed at 4 times the rate of white Alaskans. Nearly half of the state's homicides took place in Anchorage, which is home to almost 40% of the state's population. But Hull-Gilley says there was another metric that mirrored the bump in the rise in homicide rates in the last 5 years. More than half of homicide victims tested positive for the use of alcohol or drugs, especially marijuana and methamphetamines.
this homicide report is just the beginning of some very good data, working with our law enforcement partners to see if we can't identify more information that will aid in the prevention of these cases.
Homicides account for nearly 20% of the state's violent deaths, a number that is dwarfed by suicides, which account for about 70% of violent deaths. Holjilly says the remainder are from people killed by police and deaths with, quote, undetermined intent, end quote. Homicides counted in the study are only for closed cases. The first year of the pandemic was an exception to the other years of the study. While homicides spiked in the rest of the nation, they decreased by more than a third in Alaska. And Alaska House Speaker Kathy Tilton called for a vote Tuesday to reject salary increases for the legislature, governor, and state commissioners. This comes after a tumultuous month for the commission that makes salary recommendations for elected officials. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George reports.
It's been more than 10 years since the governor or the legislature have had a pay raise. The latest plan would bump the governor's pay up about 20% to $176,000 per year. Legislators would get a 67% raise to $84,000 per year. House Speaker Kathy Tilton, a Republican from Wasilla, said at a news conference that her majority caucus was concerned about the process that produced the pay raises.
People have different opinions on what this should look like, but at this point, I think that conversation needs to continue a little bit more.
Salary recommendations are typically made by a 5-member state commission appointed by the governor. Earlier this month, all 5 members resigned or were fired after producing a recommendation report that included raises for the governor, lieutenant governor, and state commissioners, but not for the legislature. A new commission was appointed almost immediately, which amended the report to include a pay raise for legislators. Proponents of the legislative pay raise say it ensures diversity in the body. Larry Persily was one of the members of the original commission who was fired last week. He says the commission shuffling is not how government is supposed to work.
This was not a transparent process. This was within the span of, 48 hours? You get rid of a board, just happen to have 5 bystanders who you're going to name, and magically they all agree to vote the same way on something that there's no backup, no discussion. I'm okay with a legislative pay raise. I would have voted for one, but this is not the way to do it.
Senate President Gary Stevens, a Kodiak Republican, said Tuesday that the legislative pay raise was a long time coming. He did not indicate whether he would support Tilton's call to reject the new salary recommendations.
We're concerned. We're listening about that. We're listening to what they're saying. We haven't made any firm decision on what our plans are exactly.
In a press conference Tuesday, Governor Mike Dunleavy defended the decision to replace compensation commissioners.
I know that some want to believe that there's some nefarious or dark reason why the members of the commission were removed. But again, as I explained earlier, all statute, constitution, regs, you name it, were followed, have been followed, will be followed.
The governor said the decision to accept or reject the new salary recommendations is in the hands of the legislature. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
The salmon shark dissection was a fan favorite event at Kodiak's commercial fishing trade show Comfish before the pandemic. Before that, it was part of Kodiak's Whale Fest for years. This year, the dissection returned after a pandemic-induced hiatus. No sharks were available for this year's event, but as KMXT's Brian Benoit reports, organizers used an inky alternative instead.
A squid measuring about 6 feet long arrived in a cooler and was laid out across a few tables at the Kodiak High School entryway. About 3 dozen observers gathered in fascination as the first incisions were made. Eloise Pryor was one of the excited kids nearby.
So, what did you think of the dissection?
It was amazing!
It was most likely a robust clubhook squid, according to the scientists. The crowd watched as they identified each organ from the squid's eyes to its stomach. Eloise says she was excited to help the biologists.
Other than that, squids have 3 hearts.
The annual dissection used to be a Comfish tradition to educate and entertain kids and adults alike, but there hasn't been a dissection at the conference since 2019. Usually organizers dissect salmon sharks, which are named for their primary food source. But there isn't a commercial harvest for that species, so the event is reliant on incidental harvest or bycatch. Julie Matwiyu works for Alaska Sea Grant and led this year's dissection. She says no sharks were available this year, but the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration happened to have a frozen squid handy.
And then at the last minute, we didn't have anything, so NOAA was holding this for educational activity.
The squid was caught about 70 nautical miles east of Kodiak. The dissection lasted for about 3 hours, including cleanup. Matt Wiyu says they hope to host another dissection, but what animal the crowd will learn about next year is still yet to be caught. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
It's been 2 months since a polar bear killed a woman and her 1-year-old son in the small Bering Sea village of Wales. And questions still linger about what caused the bear attack on their short walk from the school to the clinic. But more important for Wales and its neighboring communities is the question of how to move on from the tragedy. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride found out, it's required a collective approach to healing and vast reserves of strength and kindness.
The name for Wales in the Inupiat language is Kingigan, which means high place. The village, which sits beside a mountain, also hugs the beach, and in the winter, it's hard to tell where the shore ends and the sea ice begins. Ice that makes it possible for bears to hunt for seals and other animals that provide the high-energy food they need to survive in the Arctic. Susan Nesda, the chief administrator for the Bering Strait School District, says it can be an unforgiving land.
Tough things happen. And life in general is a little more difficult.
And this winter, even more so. The last polar bear attack in Alaska was in Point Lay 30 years ago. So this is unfamiliar territory and hard to see the way forward, just as it was on the day of the attack when windstorms whipped up whiteout conditions and gave the bear a veil of invisibility to prowl about unnoticed until it struck. Nesda, who manages the school district from Unalakleet, a community more than 200 air miles away, heard about the attack over the phone as it happened. She was told that some staffers and other community members had risked their own lives trying to save Summer Myomic and her son, Clyde Onktawasra.
So they were hitting the bear with shovels. And the bear can be seen on camera leaving that attack and chasing those people up onto the school porch stairs into the front entryway, and the principal managed to close the door.
Staffers shut the blinds so the children couldn't see, but that didn't stop them from experiencing the trauma.
Each person responds to a crisis differently. You're fine 1 minute, you're not the next.
In this constantly shifting emotional landscape, Nesda says her staff and their 30 students have to be allowed to heal on their own timetable, a process which requires tenderness and patience.
Some students are really struggling. They're just really, really struggling hard.
Parents are now asked to escort their children to and from school. There are extra safety patrols around the building, and initially a shortened school day with a focus on emotional well-being, followed by a gradual transition back to academics. But parents do have the option to keep their kids home depending on bear sightings or how they're feeling that day. The school now has a snow machine to give teachers rides, and a fence is going up under the shop, an area that gave the bear cover before it emerged from under the building.
We're gradually getting back to a little more normalized day.
It's taken a lot of hard work to get to this point. The Kingamute School in Wales doesn't usually have a full-time counselor. They rotate between the district's 15 communities. But since the attack, the district has made sure that Wales has always had one on hand, which meant other schools had fewer counselor visits, a sacrifice each willingly made. The community has also taken some practical steps to move beyond the bear. Volunteers are regularly on patrol to watch for the Nanut, the Inupiaq word for polar bears. Michael Oxarock, the whale's representative on the Alaska Nanut Co-Management Council, says the council is working with other organizations to bring back regular patrols. With a warming climate and less sea ice, Oxarock believes more human-bear encounters are inevitable.
With the sea ice receding as much as it has, bears aren't able to go and hunt as well as they used to 15 years ago.
Scientists say it's hard to know how much the sea ice was a factor in the attack. It was locked in place when the bear struck. But Oxarock says the water didn't begin to freeze until December.
It finally formed maybe 2 to 3 inches mid-January. That's very late for the area of wolves.
The bears need the ice to hunt for their prey. But Dave Gustine, the polar bear manager for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Anchorage, says the ice is just one part of a mystery that was hard for investigators to probe.
We kind of had to tread lightly, and one thing we landed on, we made sure by deferring to the community and the family's needs and requests any chance we could.
After a community member shot and killed the bear, which was a male, investigators took samples from the skull. Tests didn't find any signs of avian flu, rabies, or other pathogens that could affect a bear's behavior. Recent results for tests on a tooth put the bear's age at about 17. 15 is considered old for a male. Gustine says this may answer questions about why the bear was in poor condition.
Were your meals frequent enough to either A, put on extra energy reserves, or B, have to dip into those reserves? And so this bear was in a place where there wasn't any fat on his body.
Gustine says the bear had less body fat than is typical for this time of the year, and its age could have contributed to a rapid decline in its ability to survive. But other than the bear's age and condition, Gustine says there's not enough information to know for sure what caused the attack. Studies show that polar bears in the Chukchi Sea area are overall in good health, and until now, polar bears have not really been a problem in Wales, which once had a patrol but lost its funding. Lindsay Manjapane, a biologist in Fish and Wildlife's polar bear program, says the money went elsewhere.
We have some communities that have over 100 calls every year of bears that are in town, so that requires a lot of resources, so that kind of took the majority of our funding. But we do have some great partners now that might potentially have some funding to help out with these other communities, and it's definitely a priority for us to try to make that happen.
But for now, the community takes comfort in seeing snow machine lights off in the distance as volunteers take turns on patrol, pulling together to do the best they can to emerge from a dark and difficult time. A GoFundMe page to help the family cover the cost of mourning their loss far exceeds the fundraising goal. There are pictures of Summer Myomic and her son, Clyde Onctawasruk III, who glowed with the full-face look of a well-loved child, as well as photos of Summer's 3-year-old daughter, who must now grow up without her mom. One of the fundraisers wrote that Summer was kind and loved by everyone, described as a mother who was incredibly proud of her 2 young babies. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
TikTok CEO is grilled on Capitol Hill. I'm Novosafo with a Marketplace Minute. Lawmakers at a House hearing repeatedly challenged TikTok's Show Chu over concerns about what his company's video app does with Americans' data and about the app's capabilities to manipulate what users see. Chu promised a firewall between data gathered in the U.S. and the video app's Chinese parent company, ByteDance. U.S. officials want TikTok sold off. China Today said it would oppose such a move. Ford Today said its electric vehicle unit has lost $3 billion over the last 2 years. The automaker considers the unit a startup. It expects profits in several years. Initial claims for jobless benefits declined by 1,000 last week for a total of 191,000. That remains historically low. I'm Novosafo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Well, good afternoon. It is Thursday, the 23rd of March. The year is 2023. Sunrise today was at 8.02 a.m. Sunset tonight will be at 8.30 p.m. That's 12 hours and 28 minutes of daylight, a gain of 5 minutes and 1 second from yesterday. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 8 a.m. And record high for today was 55 degrees in 1965. Record low was 4 degrees back in 1975. Looking over at our marine weather from Marmot Island to Sikkenak out to 15 nautical miles, there's a gale warning today. Today, west winds of 35 knots diminishing to 25 knots in the afternoon. Seas to 9 feet. Tonight, southwest winds of 25 knots with seas to 6 feet. For Friday, southwest winds of 20 knots with seas to 5 feet. Looking at the Shelikof, there's a gale warning today as well. Today, west winds of 35 knots, seas to 8 feet and freezing spray. Tonight, southwest winds of 25 knots, seas to 7 feet. And Friday, southwest winds of 25 knots with seas to 6 feet. We have time for some community announcements. There is a Kodiak Island Borough Assembly special budget work session that Saturday, March 25th at 9 a.m. in the Assembly Work Chambers. That is a work session. Citizens' call-in number for that is 486-3231. Agenda items will be submission of fiscal year 2024 budget and capital program to the Assembly, general budget discussion, and KIBSD budget funding discussion. And senior citizens of Kodiak will be holding a regularly scheduled board meeting Wednesday, March 29th at 1 p.m. in the Senior Center Multipurpose Room. The public is invited to attend. For more information, you can call the Senior Center. Their number is 486-6181. Kodiak College and the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce have a special business after-hours event from pickleball to painting, cannibal math, jeans, gaming, comedy, learning to fly, or learning to lift a fingerprint. Join the March Mini Mashup event on Friday, March 31st from 4:30 to 7:30. You'll be able to ask questions about degree planning in the mini advising sessions, learn about financing your college career, take fun mini classes, meet professors, participate in a campus-wide scavenger hunt, visit the Community Education Art Show, and enjoy complimentary appetizers and drinks. In addition to providing college classes, degrees, and certificates, Kodiak College offers a wide range of activities and services for our community. You can stop by to see all that they have to offer. Doors open at 4:30 p.m. on Friday, March 31st. That is Friday, March 31st at 4:30. And KMXT Board of Directors will hold their next regular monthly meeting on Tuesday, March 28th at 6 p.m. in the KMXT building. That's 620 Egan Way. The meeting is open to the public and members are always encouraged to attend. For more information, you can call us here at 486-3181. The meeting will also be available via Zoom. You can call or email gm@kmxt.org for the Zoom link. And Kodiak Harvest Food Cooperative Annual Meeting is coming up. The Kodiak Harvest Food Cooperative Annual Meeting will take place on Saturday, April 1st at the Kodiak Baptist Mission Heritage Center. There will be a vendor market from 4 to 5 p.m. and the meeting will be conducted from 5 to 6 p.m. There will be a silent dessert auction from 4 to 6 p.m. Live music by LME Tiller and light refreshments will be served. All are welcome, but you must be a KHFC member to vote in the Board of Director election. And I think we have time for one more. The Kodiak Refuge Salmon Camp Registration Lottery is open, but not for long. Kodiak Refuge will be having summer science camps for students going into kindergarten through eighth grade. Find registration packets on the Kodiak Refuge website, or you can stop by the Refuge Visitor Center. Packets are available at the front door or inside during open hours. That's Wednesday through Friday from 12 to 4 p.m. The deadline to enter the lottery is March 31st.
The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. On Thursday, March 23rd, the Assembly and School Board will be having a joint work session in the School District Conference Room at 6:30 p.m. And on Saturday, March 25th, the Assembly will be having a special work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 9 a.m. All meetings are open to the public and meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 for more information.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Support for KMXT comes from GCI. Since 2017, the GCI Suicide Prevention Fund has given nearly $500,000 to Alaska organizations and nonprofits in an effort to help prevent suicide and promote healthy communities. More information about suicide prevention resources and initiatives can be found at gci.com/gives.